Is debt beating you down? You need discipline. You need the Debt Ninja. If you've been caught in a financial trap and need to be set free, then you need the Debt Ninja. Want to stop those harassing collection calls, start saving thousands in interest and fees, and get out of debt fast? Then you need to call the Debt Ninja. The Debt Ninja will find the best companies across the country that will help you consolidate all your bills into one easy payment, reduce your payments by 30 to 50%, and get you out of debt fast. If you have unsecured debt of $10,000 or more, such as credit cards, loans, or medical bills, call the Debt Ninja for a free 15-minute consultation.
Call 800-839-5518. 800-839-5518. That's 800-839-5518. Call today.
The Debt Ninja.
Radio influence. The future is now.
Here's how you start the podcast. Hang on a sec.
Now I'm ready to do this thing.
Let's do it.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210-story office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust.
This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red,
red nervous pill. System of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy red can't pill. Function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
9/11truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
Yes, I'm here. I'm just moving in slow motion like Neo and Trinity, just like mowing down the bad guys. What's going on? There it is. I knew it was coming. Welcome to Dangerous Conversation right here at RadioInfluence.com. I am Ledge.
I am Groot. I am Ledge.
I'm all Team Baby Groot, by the way. Loving that. So what's going on? You guys good? Everybody having a wonderful trip inside this Matrix and saying to themselves, well, that's bullshit. And look, they're fighting back. And oh, look, they're labeling us again. Man, they're so good at it. They are so afraid of the third opinion anywhere, and that, by the way, has a lot to do with left and right, too, because they certainly know how to drive the wedge issues. And when you scroll up and down Facebook or Twitter and you see the wedge issues, you don't see people talking about harmony or generating their own fuels in their own towns. You don't see it coming together yet. Yet. You see them highly divided. Angry, frustrated, sad, and you also have a great. I use social media as a pulse of like, wow, look what people are talking about. Look what people aren't talking about. And I'm, you know me, I'm happy people are engaged and paying attention. Now, maybe that's more than they used to. I know it's me. That applies to me. It's definitely more than I used to. You know, everybody knows that. I've told that story a bazillion times. So what that intro comes from is my awakening in 2004 and me deciding, geez, I'm on a 100,000-watt transmitter. Maybe I should ask people where the goddamn plane is at Shanksville or the Pentagon. Maybe I should ask people if they even know what Building 7 is. And, you know, it's kind of led me to where I am right now, sitting in out on the Ledge Studios doing Dangerous Conversation. And from all the way back then, in 2004, the spring, I read a book called House of Bush, House of Sod. And it mentioned that the Bin Laden family had been flown out when all the other planes were grounded. And I was like, no fucking way. You know, you go up to that point where you don't necessarily believe everything your government is telling you, but you're definitely in lockstep with them. You're like, yeah, we're the good guys. Some things you're, you know, a little rough and, you know, sometimes, you know, we just have to bomb other countries. But, you know, we stand for what's right. And the people in that fucking cesspool of Washington, D.C., they represent us and what we need. And they're worried about the betterment of our life and our lifestyles. And they're completely... It's like this fantasy. And eventually, the only people who won't waver that I've noticed are definitely old people. My brother Zoltan, there's no way he's going to waver from his God, his Bible, his Catholicism, and his country now. With all the, you know, end times and this is how blah, you know. And everybody's like, the people that obviously don't need to waver are the young people coming into the Matrix that... or doing their own thinking about, and why should I work 40 hours a week? And how much debt am I going to be in? And, oh, yeah, and let's look at the people before us. Oh, wow. You know, millions of people losing their homes and chasing that American dream. So what we've got is what we always have. That's what I love about this show is not just this show, but the idea that this show is so pro new media. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your take is. Atheist, completely hardcore Christian, anywhere in between on that specific conversation, or gay and completely straight and completely, you know, all the shades of gray that we know exist in the world. We know people are bisexual. We know people are completely straight and completely gay and completely bi, and then there's shades in between that. That's what the movie Kinsey's about. So they keep trying to use... okay, let me rephrase that. They keep using wedge issues, and it's still working, but they don't realize the backfire on that is more conversation out loud about things that people are completely polarized on. That is social media. That's why it gets so ratcheted up, and that's why it sometimes can get obviously mean-spirited. It can do the typical thing of attack the messenger rather than discuss the topic. But none of this is new. Okay, I worked in terrestrial radio since 1980. The same kind of backstabbing, talking behind people's backs, the same infighting you see where people in new media, one new media outlet doesn't no longer endorse another new media outlet and they're too this for us and we're not this enough. You know what? That happens in corporate America, in big tall buildings. It happens in power struggles for banks. It basically the same structure of people in their quest to either survive or climb a ladder and, quote, achieve, unquote, they are put in competition with each other. Well, mainstream media is now fucking freaked out because anything that qualifies as new media has been calling out their bullshit for a decade and a half. And then when you go farther down a rabbit hole, you go, yeah, all the way back to, you can go back to Reefer Madness. When you wanted to change the way people think about something, if you controlled the media outlet, in that case, it was Hearst and his newspapers, you could form opinions in people's minds without them truly knowing all of the evidence, all the truth, and anything else. So my point is, 100 years ago, the formula was the same as it is now. Attack the messenger. And disseminate a whole bunch of shit. Man, I got so much audio to get to. But it's never been about right and left to me. You guys know that. You know, I don't ever associate with a religion or a political viewpoint. I refuse to be put in a box. I consider myself pliable, malleable. Well, that's like you trip, but you don't fall. Like when you're walking down the sidewalk and you just kind of, and people all see you and you just kind of, I'm not even going to go near that word again. It's been going on forever. Information is always power. It is always power. Always. Knowledge is power. And now the knowledge you're gaining and I'm gaining and anybody else that goes outside the matrix to look into whatever it is that fascinates them, angers them, frustrates them, motivates them, they are all becoming their own little information pod. And they're getting to understand and see things that they normally would have never have seen. Tanks rolling down streets in Boston. Watching what happened with the Dakota Pipeline. It's not over, by the way. But watching how it ratcheted up and how the show of force showed up. To a peaceful protest. These aren't people slinging guns. And by the way, the opposite side of that coin is still a fascinating topic. If the government shows up with guns, should you show up with guns too? And those two opinions are completely fucking polarized. I mean, they, you know, when they're like, oh, guns kill people, oh, people kill people. And, you know, and I watch it happen, I go, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Because that's how you learn. Okay? You learn, oh, gee, my opinion's not the only one? Really? Seriously? I mean, someone else might have an opinion based on a completely different way of looking at why they own a gun, or how they use that gun, or when they use that gun, or how safe they are with that gun, how they teach gun safety in their homes. Yeah, a lot of people die of guns in this country, but like 70% of them are suicides. So do you just remove the depression and get to better medicines and heal the person? Or do you worry about how they ended their life? 20% is gang-related. And the drug war, and that gun violence disappears too. There are ways to fix shit. But people profit off it being fucked up. And they profit off of, yes, telling you you need another magic pill with a disclaimer that runs for 45 seconds in the middle of your football game. Go Bucks. And then suddenly you're like, gee, I might need to look into that. That's, no, that's just Big Pharma trying to tell you something. I don't know. Eat a salad, exercise once in a while. No, fuck that. Take this pill. I know it's got 18 different side effects and you might grow a fucking third eye, but come on, take the pill. That's what we're up against. We're not up against someone who owns the media outlets that wants you to get to a higher self, that wants you to truly eat better, that wants you to not be afraid. The exact opposite of what media does. They ratchet up the fear. And they're good at it. And they've been doing it for hundreds. Fuck that. Ever since someone shared a story about, I mean, you know, The Princess Bride is a great movie, but it's about a false flag. It's about faking something. And we all know that phrase now. This fake news thing is not going away. I personally fucking love it. I love it. I love the idea that the media is attacking the new media. How cool is that? How cool is that? I don't care what side you're on. I don't care if you're... And by the way, I'm going to play some fucking Tucker. I am going to play some fucking Tucker Carlson tonight. How's that? See? If someone's bringing out a point, and I go, you know what? People need to know that. People need to pay attention to this. And it's goddamn fucking Tucker Carlson, well. And you know, I'm more concerned with what is currently listed as accurate versus what might be... The Russians. Oh, my God. Is this 1961? No. It's so funny watching them overreact now. Realizing we know they're full of shit. And they've been lying to us for so long about so many different things. And now we're all finding out about those many different things every time a pipeline is leak is revealed. Another one was today or yesterday. You know, hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil pouring into another estuaries or waterways. You know, people are learning what's going on. That is the beauty of the new media. I love it. I got so much to get to that I don't know. I usually don't like to stick a compass on this thing. I usually like to let the show flow on its own. But I got to talk real quickly about what happened here in the Bay Area. Yet another station format blown up. I was doing part-times and weekends at 98.7. I found out on Facebook. That's how plugged in to their matrix I am. I'm a part-timer. I don't know much about what's actually going on when it comes to... And, you know, frankly, I kind of like that. I like doing terrestrial radio. I have fun doing it. And it's great to make some extra money. But it's also, you know, let's face it. You're listening to somebody that did radio in the 80s when consultants were like, oh, I don't know, one or two. When you could only own an AM and an FM. When you could never have the combo of newspaper, television, and radio in a market because they wanted diversity in their media. And here it is in 2016, 4 decades later. God damn it. It's hard to come to terms with that sometimes. That is definitely not the same beast. Of course it's not. Now, I kind of blame Clinton a little. You know, he deregulated media in the late 70s. And, you know, he also did that with Glass-Steagall in the banking industry. And then you watch the wave of absolute... God, it's a combination of crony capitalism and just the inflationary dollar where the Fed just keeps printing more money and more people are on the teat. And more money goes missing. And it's just this ugly, I mean, seriously, this, maybe it's exactly the way Rome broke down, you know, debase the currency, give them their games. I know you guys give me shit about being a Bucks fan or football fan because, oh, these things are far more important. Well, yeah, on a spiritual and global scale, yes, they are. Of course they are. I'm not going to argue that. But watching established media attack any and all. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who it is. Hate them, love them, love her, hate her. I don't care who they are. I'm glad they're there. Because that is giving you, even though it's like you're not getting two messengers anymore, you're getting 20. And you're getting 20 different opinions. And you got to do some fucking work and figure it out. Or at least come to your terms of what's going on. No one's going to be here to tell you how it is anymore. The U.S. media is the state media for the government, just like people talk about RT. Now, remember, RT is the American version of Russia Today, and it is produced in Washington. And if you go on there, you will hear a small amount of criticism of Russia, and it is definitely the vehicle to expose and, just expose topics in America that the state media, MSNBC, Fox, CBS, NPR too. You know, everybody thinks, they're out there protesting the pipeline. NPR is still pure. No, they're not pure. They are bought and paid for. Most of their money is donated by the same big giant corporations that want fucking pipelines. So don't kid yourself when it comes to state media in America. It is the equivalent of what Pravda is or anything in Russia that is there and designed to make the Russian government and the people who run it and the people that control it and the people that control the Russian people look great and make everybody else the enemy. It's the same. It's the same in China. Of course it is. It's just taken a while for it to sink in here with Americans that you cannot trust your own media anymore. Stop it. When they're attacking new media, what kind of signs are that? It's awesome to see. Honestly. You know, it's that Gandhi thing. You know, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Okay, they ignored new media forever, right? Okay. Then they laughed at new media. Now they're attacking new media. It's great to see. So I don't care if you're talking, what Lee Camp does or what James Colbert does or, off the top of my head here, Amber Lyon and Abby Martin and Ben Swan and Glenn Greenwald. And, believe me, obviously there's a big list. But yeah, go to all of them. Go to all of them. Absolutely. I'm going to start the show with this audio. It's just a brief piece, but it is an amazing soundbite from Edward Snowden and Katie Couric.
I wonder when it is that he thinks America was great. Because if you remember what we did to traitors in 1776 and afterwards, we made them president. We're a country that was born from an act of treason against a government that had run out of control. Now, this is not to say that breaking the rules is something that should happen all the time, but we should always make a distinction that right and wrong is a very different standard than legal and illegal.
I think that's, the libertarian, the anarchist, or any constitutionalist, maybe some Tea Partyist who, don't want America to just be white. There are people that realized the reason the Constitution and the amendments of the Constitution are there is to make government flexible, especially the amendments. That's what they mean. So we're now learning, thanks to this guy, who, by the way, is still considered a traitor. Now, think of what he said. They made the traitors into presidents. Because someone has to speak up first. And then second and third. And then when you look at the Declaration, you see that, John Hancock wrote his real big and some other guys were, because they're all afraid about what they will personally lose. That's the difference between the first guy who steps up. Usually probably got nothing to lose. This guy did. Very talented, making great money. He kept his mouth shut. But he decided to let you know your government is absolutely overreaching in what they're doing in your privacy, in your world, when it comes to the Constitution of the United States of America. Versus what he said, again, right and wrong versus what's called legal and illegal. That comes right down to, who declared that fucking law? Who were they? Well, how did they benefit from it, by the way? Hugh Bono. Someone introduces some law, another one. I mean, tens of thousands of them. It's fucking ridiculous. But yeah, what's in it for that guy? Why did he make, espionage illegal? And by the way, that's not espionage. Espionage is giving those secrets to the enemy, not to the people. He gave information to the people. That's not espionage. Espionage would be if he took that and somehow profited by bringing it to, quote, one of our enemies, and they could have yet another card to hold in geopolitics. But that's not Snowden. Snowden says it's the difference between right and wrong. In other words, when you get to a certain state of consciousness, you are going to see the borders of the countries dissolve. You're certainly going to see everything from people's sexuality and what they choose, what they don't choose. And maybe you had a harder opinion about that stuff, and suddenly you start to see that dissolve. It's because you're getting to know those people. You're getting to know them. All right, let's let him finish here.
Law is no substitute for morality.
The law is no, yes.
Standard than legal and illegal. The law is no substitute for morality, here or then.
Are you saying what you did was right?
I think, yeah.
Or legal, or both?
I would not have done it if I didn't believe it was right.
There's always that second and third person that kind of goes, yeah, me too, man. And then when the cops show up or the guards show up and they take the one, quote, traitor, unquote, away in chains and, tear them into pieces or, do whatever back then. They made you afraid to be a turncoat. They didn't fuck around. We're not there. We're not there. Are we? Are we there? We're not seeing that kind of violence to people that are outspoken against the United States government. When I mean outspoken, I don't mean to complain just for the sake of complaining. I mean you're actually concerned about a topic or two. You're informed about that topic, and you are at odds with what's going on. Specifically, if the government is just pulling more shenanigans. So that's, it's vital. Man, I got so many different ones to get to. This is the fake news related one, too. Now, this goes back to Bush. Let me get the volume up on this. This goes back to right around weapons of mass destruction. When people were starting to say, okay, what's going on? What, we're getting news out of Iraq or news out of Afghanistan, but, where's this news coming from and who is producing it and how is it getting to us and in America and so on and so forth? Check this conversation out. Now, this, if you were like holding the Constitution right in front of Bush's face, he would still find a way to kind of peek around and go, but check this out. It's a great question, by the way. This is back then. What's the idea? What's the difference between fake news?
Your administration continues to make the use of video news releases, which are prepackaged news stories sent to television stations, fully aware that some or many of these stations will air them without any disclaimer that they are produced by the government. Comptroller General of the United States this week said that raises ethical questions. Does it raise ethical questions about the use of government money to produce stories about the government that wind up being aired with no disclosure that they were produced by the government?
There is a Justice Department opinion that says these pieces are within the law so long as they're based upon facts, not advocacy. And I expect our agencies to adhere to that ruling.
The government is producing fake news 15 years ago. That's why this piece is obviously relevant, and they're going to find a way to skate it. And by the way, that had a lot to do with all the pundits. It doesn't matter which side of the fence, you know, Matt Owl or O'Reilly, whatever. The whole idea that they were not considered news and they could say whatever they wanted and it didn't have to be true or not. The FCC ruled that. So you know, I keep hearing fake news, fake news. I'm like, man, your news has been fake for a long time. A long time. Watch this. Listen.
To that Justice Department opinion. This has been a long-standing practice of the federal government to use these types of videos. The Agricultural Department, as I understand, has been using these videos for a long period of time. The Defense Department, other departments have been doing so. It's important that they be based upon the guidelines set out by the Justice Department. Now, I think it'd be helpful if local stations then disclose to their viewers if that's, you know, that this was based upon a factual report and they chose to use it.
Yeah. AP, UPI, trying to tell me that stuff's not co-opted? Of course it is. It's been co-opted quite some time now. Because if it wasn't, 9/11 Truth would be on a newspaper right now somewhere where it wouldn't be co-opted. And it would be, hey, we're about getting you the news, no matter what, 100% of the time, 100% accurate, and 100% backed up by, you know, obviously two news sources. You know, the way it used to be when you learned it in, like, junior high, if you're going to be a reporter, you need that kind of information. This information is not only being produced by the government and made to look like it's not from the government and then being played on, yes, the government, state-controlled media. Face it. It is state-controlled media. Face it. It is. So if anybody's fake, it's them. It's been them, and it's going to continue to be them. This guy follows up, and that's what I've, you know, a reporter basically, here it comes.
But evidently in some cases that's not the case, so anyway.
You guarantee that's happening by including that language in the prepackaged report.
Yeah, I don't, you know, look, I mean, oh, you mean a disclosure? I'm George W. Bush, and I...
Well, some way to make sure it couldn't air without the disclosure that you believe is so vital.
You know, Ken, I mean, there's a...
In other words, Miss President said, yeah, we should let people know. It's, why isn't that in a part of the package? That's what's called following up. Following up. Now they're just all a bunch of kiss asses. They all want the gigs. They all want to be, I'm in the press secretary room. I'm a big shot. Great follow-up.
There's a procedure that we're going to follow, and the local stations ought to, if there's a deep concern about that, ought to tell their viewers what they're watching.
Yes. By the way, it did change. Okay. Under Obama, anything that was produced by the state through MSNBC or CNN or whatever, any one of those did talk out loud about doing it. That's good. It's good to see. Next video as I scroll. I had quite a few of them today. Here we go. Yeah, let's switch gears for a little while here, away from the news. It's a fun little talk. When the TED Talks first started, and I kept seeing people coming out and talking about concepts and scientific minds going, hey, you know, if we only did this, or, you know, if enough of us were smart enough, you know, And some of it's about, you know, I get it, conservation and rethinking things. But some of the talks about consciousness have not necessarily been banned, but they've been put to the side. So it seems like almost at any level of anywhere in media, this is the point I'm making, that shit can get co-opted. People are going after Alex Jones right now. I don't know. Fired another guy, didn't fire another guy. I don't know. I found Jack Blood talking about Alex Jones 6-7 years ago on YouTube. And the point I'm making is the media is still attacking itself. In other words, new media is attacking other new media, you know, the stuff on the left, like the how much I know. Total blank. All right, let's go with, you know, MSNBC or the Huffington Post or that kind of stuff. Okay, and then on the other side, we got like Fox News, and they don't necessarily operate in the same hemispheres, but they do operate and they overlap because they need each other. They feed off each other. You know, when Bill O'Reilly says something horrible, you can bet Rachel Maddow is going to come to the defense and you'll feel better when you turn your TV off half at night, depending on which way you lean and the things you care about. And so I get that. But, you know, even the TED Talk, which has always been limited to 15 minutes from time to time, has been hard to find. And the people that gave those talks, because they were talking about things like psilocybin or mushrooms or MDMA or anything along those lines, or talking about, you know, maybe the fact that addiction is not a physical thing. It's, you know, people were basically challenging the matrix, or, you know, kind of hacking into it. Those people's talks were a little bit tougher to find, and they pointed that out. Now, this is kind of an easy one to go through. I don't know how much we're going to go. We're probably only going about halfway. But it's for 2 points. It's the marijuana monster myth is what David calls it here. And really what he's talking about is the stereotype that has been perpetuated by everything from Cheech and Chong movies. You got to give him credit, you know, if the stereotype exists and people paid money and people laughed at that, and some of that became the stereotype of you mention out loud that you smoke cannabis and suddenly, oh, you're Cheech Marion, you know, with your car up in the middle of the fucking highway going nowhere. And your guy sitting next to you just ate a whole bunch of pills. That stereotype is melting away because, A, talks like this one, we'll play a little bit here in a sec, and, of course, people sharing their own opinion and go, oh, yeah, I use weed. You know, when it comes out of the dark, when it's no longer shameful, so many people will be talking about it for so many different reasons. But here we go. Let me see if we can fast forward to it. I think it pretty much does its own thing here. Yeah, there we go.
Hi. When I was invited here to give a talk on marijuana, I wasn't sure exactly what that meant. On the subject of, or just on? I hate to disappoint, so I'm doing both.
Attaboy!
My pleasure.
Listen to that. Listen to that approval. It's A, mostly because most of those people have direct influence from that drug in their life. In other words, they've tried it. And sometimes it works for a lot of people. Sometimes it doesn't. I have 2 or 3 friends that absolutely just don't like it. It makes them, you know, paranoid or worrisome, and it just doesn't work for them. But did you hear that crowd? the tide has not only just changed, the tide is rushing in when it comes to cannabis and what's going to happen here in America, not just here in Florida, but everywhere, and hemp as well. And it's coming because, here we go, excuse me. The marijuana monster myth is quickly fading away, as, you know, maybe someday my brother picks up the phone and calls me. Doubt it, but maybe someday he changes his mind on cannabis and his little brother using it and why he's decided not to talk to me because I do and his recommended rehab. I get it. I know he's older. He's a lot older. He's like 15 years older than I am. So, you know, I get it. He's giving me the tough love. And it's like, you know, he's Keith Partridge and I'm Danny Partridge. And he's going to take care of his little brother and get him all cleaned up. So the myth, the stereotypes are melting away one person at a time in the positive. And of course, that subtracts from the opposite side of that, where more and more people are changing their mind. Now, whether they're, you know, changing their mind because they're actually, again, first person and they've tried it now, or it works for them, or they've been a closet user and now can finally come out and talk about it. But it's a beautiful thing. This is kind of a fun talk. I'm going to let it go a couple minutes here. This guy's entertaining.
Sure. Have you ever really looked at your hand? I tell that joke because according to lore, people high on marijuana are amazed by their limbs, often while slow-motion speed-eating Doritos in their parents' basement. I hate this joke because it invokes a stereotype that is reductive at best and supports a system of diabolical lies at worst. But I'm getting ahead of myself. My name is David Schmader, and I am a pothead. By this, I mean that when it comes time to enjoy an adult intoxicant, I will forego beer, wine, and spirits in favor of marijuana, which for me offers a world of nuanced delight and inspiration beyond the more crude effects of booze. But I am not here to proselytize, and for a long time, I kept quiet about my own enjoyment of weed. It was illegal for most of the time I was enjoying it, and why make myself vulnerable as an out-and-proud lawbreaker if I didn't have to? I also dreaded being saddled with the stoner stereotype of having my every move interpreted through the lens of pothead, a label that calls up images of Mr. Magoo levels of forgetfulness and passivity bordering on the comatose. So what if I used weed not to escape, but to engage with art and ideas and food and dogs and hilariously terrible movies? I was but one man, and I couldn't reconfigure society's image of the pothead all by myself. I stayed in the closet. And I'm familiar with the closet. I grew up gay in the pre-Ellen bad old days, when the only out gays were those who couldn't or didn't want to hide it. Drag queens and butch lesbians and gay bar raid victims whose faces wound up in newspapers. And these trailblazers might have been the whole of queer representation if Harvey Milk hadn't urged everyone to come out, especially all the non-remarkable queers who'd previously flown under the radar. Only then could an honest portrait of this subculture emerge. It's the same with weed. Only instead of drag queens and butches, weed's visibility parade is led by Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg and unlucky subjects of weed busts. And I love drag queens and Snoop Dogg. But leaving such exceptional outliers to do the heavy lifting of representation not only skews perception, it allows damaging lies to flourish.
You know, that is so, so important to remember. Call it mass categorization. It's the same thing that's happening right now in social media, where everyone's, oh, you're this. Boom. Bam. You might disagree with one thing, you know. And so, oh, you're this. And it's the same thing with anybody who smoked or will smoke cannabis. Oh, you know, you're Snoop Dogg or you're Tommy Chong or you are automatically bam, boom, just like that. You are the stereotype. You're not an intellect or you're not creative or this doesn't absolutely spur new creations. Oh, yeah. And by the way, most people know the stories of the people who ran corporations like Microsoft and tripped on acid and opened their minds. That's not necessarily being a trailblazer. And then when you have that much fucking money, you don't have to worry about what people think about you. And you can come out of the closet like Jobs did and talk about something like that. I'm not trying to pick him apart, but okay. Motherfucker's set for life. No risk. There's a ton of reward coming for opening people's minds about the idea that we're on the same planet as these substances. Maybe, just maybe, they're supposed to have a fucking role in our life. Ugh. But you attack it with intellect. I want you to hear those couple sentences again. He's so right.
Instead of drag queens and butches, Weed's visibility parade is led by Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg and unlucky subjects of weed busts. And I love drag queens and Snoop Dogg, but leaving such exceptional outliers to do the heavy lifting of representation not only skews perception, it allows damaging lies to flourish. And the primary source of these lies is, unfortunately, the U.S. government, which has strenuously vilified weed and its users for over 80 years.
The U.S. government is they're really worried about you running into fake news. Yeah, sure they are. They're all panicking. There's a room right now, and all the big hot shots and people behind the scenes and the people in front of the cameras, they're all sitting around going, fuck, we've hit ground zero on bullshit. They simply don't believe us anymore. Well, what do we do? I'd say we attack the people that are actually starting to expose pieces of the truth bit by bit, site by site, link by link, video by video, cooperation but from a second witness, bringing science and speculation just look at the forensic investigations in 9/11. See, that's what they're worried about. They're worried about the world is full of wonderful people that are now starting to question a little bit here, a little bit there. I always tell people, bite off a couple things you're passionate about and fill up on it. Learn about it. Question it. And seriously, maybe you can affect some change there. Maybe you can't. But you know what? It's going to change you for the better. And that's the evolution of your consciousness. That's why you seek these things. That's why you're curious like I am. It's because people have been trying to control you for millennia. They haven't been trying. They have. And just now, while you are incarnated and I'm sitting here at this podcast just now in this world that we call time, not the past, because it wasn't time yet. Now is the time where people are taking control of information. How fucking cool. Seriously. How cool. I know you can get down. I know you can look at, oh, this is going wrong. And this, you know what? You need to see what's happening. You need to see what's happening in front of you. And every single time someone beats a fucking stereotype into the ground and someone just walks up and goes, oh, by the way, oh, excuse me, this is the truth right here. And here's how we can prove it. The world becomes a better place. That's how it works.
1930, the head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics declared, and I quote,
Inslinger, right?
Marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes and makes darkies think they're as good as white men. This type of slander presented as science was codified in 1970 when the Controlled Substances Act scheduled marijuana as a Schedule I narcotic, a designation reserved for extremely dangerous drugs with no accepted medical use. It is hard to overstate the pernicious effects of this weed's Schedule I classification.
It's this vicious catch-22. You can't research it because it's illegal to grow, and you can't grow it because it's a Schedule I.
For one thing, by scheduling weed as a dangerous drug with no medical benefit, the government makes it extremely difficult to conduct research that would prove that marijuana is a not very dangerous drug with a wealth of medical benefits. For example, to study allegedly less dangerous Schedule II drugs, scientists just the Schedule II drugs like cocaine or crystal meth.
Meth, by the way, is in a lot of medicines, you know, a lot of pick-me-ups. Yeah, we'll pick you up. Do you know that'll never be a Schedule I? And cocaine, there's too much profit in cocaine. There's no way. No way.
Allegedly less dangerous, Schedule II. To study these drugs, scientists just whip up some crystal meth and study it. But to study Schedule I marijuana, researchers must be pre-approved by the FDA, apply for government-grown marijuana from the National Institute of Drug Abuse, and be temporarily deputized by the DEA, as only federal agents are allowed to handle Schedule I narcotics.
How fucked up is that? The more something is restricted, the more you see whatever that small collective is that fears it because it could enlighten or free or again, in this case, probably more like Big Pharma's fear, as well as big alcohol. Remember, alcohol sales go down about 5% every time legal marijuana enters a state. That's just plain old, oh yeah, facts, information. Based on what? The truth about the way people are handling and certainly profiting from marijuana. I mean, you know, just, I got a story I'll get to in a little while here. Or maybe I'll just kind of dust over it, but it's already at $1 billion in money spent in Colorado, and that's 2 months to go. And that is a state of 5 million people. Florida's a state of 20 million. Half the people down here are in pain, old, retired, aging. Florida is going to be $1 billion a year, at least. At least. Maybe double, you know, 2-3 billion. It's going to be off the chain. And the whole reason it is because information from, fake news sites. Because the government still says it's bad for you. So if a fake news site says, like this man, how many different ways is it good for you? Let's count them all. He's giving out fake news right now.
Add to this the fact that most funding for drug research comes from the pharmaceutical industry, which views weed as a threat and has a vested interest in keeping it labeled as a dangerous drug with no medical benefits. But as patients in 24 medical marijuana states can tell you, weed has a ton of medical benefits, from quashing nausea to minimizing arthritis pain to controlling seizure disorders. And in the face of all this cognitive dissonance, with the government's lies chafing against the actual experience of humans, speaking honestly about my own weed use seemed like the least I could do. So I started doing it. I'm a writer who often writes about myself, and being honest about weed was a lot like being honest about gayness. Both called for greater specificity. Instead of saying I was on a date, say I was out with a guy. When writing about celebrating with friends, mention the bong. When I started this Coming Out Stoner campaign, weed was still illegal where I lived. But I worked in an alternative news weekly that encouraged radical honesty and where I'd gotten high with the editor and publisher. Still, affixing myself with a stoner label was itchy, and I offset dread of stereotyping by stepping up my professional courtesy game. I was aggressively punctual, ostentatiously well-organized, and as reasonably well-motivated as every other person on Earth. And the world turned. Now it's 2015, and within a five-mile radius of where you sit here in Seattle, there are a half dozen stores where anyone over 21 can purchase marijuana for recreational use. There are also a couple dozen dispensaries where authorized patients can buy marijuana for medicinal use. Meanwhile, 300 miles east, selling the small amount of marijuana for any reason can earn the seller a life sentence. An insane state of affairs summed up well by CNN's Mike Riggs. It should be cruel and unusual to mete out life without parole sentences for a drug so mainstream that Colorado is using state-collected pot taxes to build new schools. Yeah.
Now, I know some of you guys are libertarians. Yeah! Anarchist. I get it. You know, why tax anything? I hear from you in your sly little inserts on my social media posts. And I get it. But you know what? This is progress. Okay? Let's not pretend it's not. It's progress. It is. It's a sustainable crop. Obviously, no one is going to ever OD in on it. The only way it'll kill you is a big sack falls on your head and breaks your neck. So what's happening is... It's a good thing. It's a real good thing. I want to kind of go back, because I mentioned, did I bring it out? Oh, shit. Oh, man. I thought I had it with me. I thought I had it. Oh, there it is.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
There we go. Because we're actually going to go. I think this is the first time. I think this is history in the making. This is the first time I have actually ever gone to... and played a Tucker Carlson video on my show.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
Tucker!
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
How crazy is that? All right, here we go.
Well, here's something new. In the past 24 hours, many on the left have stepped up demands that companies like Facebook, Google, and Twitter, the companies through which almost all of your news flows, censor so-called fake news, that is, stories that some believe helped Donald Trump defeat Hillary Clinton. Such politically counterproductive writings should not be allowed, they argue, a point that the Chinese authorities have been making for many years. President Obama weighed in on the controversy today during a trip abroad to Germany, clearly siding with the censors. Watch this.
If we are not serious about facts.
Okay. Do you realize what is fucking happening in America right now? The fight for truth is happening in this country right now. The government's head honcho is sitting there ad-libbing and attacking, and believe me, this fake news thing is progress. Can't you see that? Oh, you know, I got a lot of people that I interact with, and some of you motherfuckers aren't going to be happy until it's like, I don't know, you're all living on your own island and everybody's an anarchist or whatever's going on, because you drive me a little crazy with the idea that you forget it's 2016 and that's where you live. And that's the timeline you're currently on. And everything around you isn't going to just roll over sideways and go, you're right about everything. Let's just magically make it happen. Because it's not. But when I hear the President of the United States start talking about information and news, you remember when the Soviets finally realized how much bullshit was going on? It was because the people at Pravda would basically write a story, but then put a story in between the lines. Then anybody could sit there and go, yeah, yeah. And when you start to lose control of information, you start to lose whatever it is, whatever your fucking empire is at the time. Listen to this. This is awesome.
And what's true and what's not. And particularly in an age of social media where so many people are getting their information in sound bites and snippets off their phones. If we can't discriminate between serious arguments and propaganda.
Okay. Isn't that what we're trying to do over here, too? You dick? Isn't that what we're isn't that what we've been trying to do? I love this. People are like, what do you think about all this? I'm like, man, this is amazing. You're watching the system attack the people that are questioning the system. That's stage three Gandhi shit. Stage three, baby. Wow. I know. I've been grinning for weeks ever since. Oh, wait a minute. Don't I have her too? I think I do. Shit. Let me see if I can find her while he's yakking.
Then we have problems.
That's right. Politician in chief lecturing us about propaganda. So should the government and media giants begin clamping down on information they think might hurt the Democratic cause? Here now is Jessica Tarlov, a Democratic strategist, and Kristen Tate, a contributor at The Hill, and it is great to see you both.
I'm sorry. Every once in a while during this segment, I got to fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. It just makes me feel a little bit better. Okay? Understood? Cool.
Ms. Tarlov, I will start with you.
Shocking.
One person's fake news is another person's news. And the idea that these media giants, who really have more control over the information we receive than anybody has ever had in history.
You mean the one that signs your paycheck?
And more than William Randolph first ever had, are going to start deleting things because they think they're, quote, fake, should scare all of us, shouldn't it?
Well, I think that censorship is obviously something that we need to take incredibly seriously, especially as we, you know,
welcome take seriously, we should be against it, just period, right?
I do believe that, but I do think that we do need to make a concerted effort to make sure that we are getting good, real news. I mean, this is...
Who's we?
It's because, you know, when, was it, Politico investigated Fox News claims, Fox was full of shit 70% of the time. So I do realize what I'm playing here, and I do realize that, you know, ladies and gentlemen, seriously.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
Yeah. But the reason I wanted to play it is because that sometimes everyone, doesn't matter where you lean in, you're in the middle, you're left, you're to right, you know what? When you start getting into censorship, seriously, think about that. You already have to live in a world of free speech zones now. Free speech zones. Oh yeah, we know it's 8 blocks from the place where this politician's going to arrive, but it's your constitutional right to protest. We're going to put you way the fuck over there. And now we're starting to get into should someone be granted a license to have an internet broadcast or a podcast or a blog? Should the government approve it or deny it or decline it? So as much as I think, that guy's a douchebag.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
Censorship is something we can all agree on.
The American populace, the world populace, even those in China deserve good news that's accurate. And I think what President Obama's talking about, I mean, first of all, he's frustrated, right? And he's been frustrated throughout the campaign because he's felt like it's been a factless, you know, vortex that Donald Trump has created where he said things off the cuff and gotten away with it, whereas Hillary Clinton has kind of gotten slammed for all of this. And we've debated this over and over again, and she lost and he won, and I get that. But when you have people like, I believe his name is Pete Horner, this guy who's now bragging about all the fake news that he put out through the election cycle, like he's responsible for that story that there were protesters paid $3,500 right. to go to Trump rallies. And he said it's completely fake. If you look at the link, it's abcnews.co, not.com. And Kellyanne Conway retweeted it. Corey Lewandowski did. And if people aren't being smart about the news that they're consuming, I do think we have a problem.
Okay, there's a point. Yeah, you know. Like I said, go to, it's not that I spend a lot of time at Fox News or Tucker Carlson's website or Glenn Beck's website, but I will go to their website and look at what their headlines are about. Because I'm looking for some unity. And this is something, of course, again, that both sides can agree on, is censorship. Has no place at all in a free society. Period. That's it. And if your president is talking about, go back to him for a second.
And what's true and what's not?
What's true and what's not? You mean like the incubator babies or the weapons of mass destruction? Or Assad being a bad man, and we all know it's about the fucking pipelines in Syria. So what's the truth and what's not the truth? And who's giving me the truth, Mr. President? Who's actually, what's true and what's not? This is the symptom of a machine losing control. And it is beautiful. The moment these so-called powerful people, but we all know the power's slightly higher than they are, but they are still the representation of power. And the moment they start talking about some website, you know they're taking it right up the patootie. Yeah, they're like fucking Alex Jones or it doesn't matter who. I don't care. I don't care what that person says at this point. I don't care. I don't. I need 50 more Alex Joneses, 50 more whoever, Abby Martins, 50 more Ben Swans and Amber Lyon and Glenn Greenwald and Colbert Report over from Japan. And there's more. We need tons of them. And they're worried about you. They're worried about you now. That's a great sign. It's beautiful. It's absolutely fucking beautiful. I've been in a good mood when it comes to what's happening. Trump is just, okay, he's the president. Yeah, he is, he isn't. Okay. I get all that. But I have yet to make up my mind about this guy. Gave him 100 days. His cabinet looks like Swamp Part 2. But you know what? I'm going to wait on this. Because other things are taking place that are just as important. Now, this whole leak, I think it's important. A, this is Russia Today. You're going to hear the interview with Julian Assange. Okay, Russia State Television. He's going to come on Russia State Television and tell you Russia did not hack the DNC and give those things to WikiLeaks. Like I said, if you flow one way, you got to flow the other way. You got to question all the time. Always question. But check this out. This is interesting.
Good news this. WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange has spoken exclusively to us, in fact, our Afshin Ratanzi over there in London, about the latest email leaks. During the interview, he made some unexpected revelations. We're expecting some big stuff to come out of this. What did come out of it?
Well, I have to say, Julian Assange is not going to endear himself to the US Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton. We went over to the Ecuadorian embassy where he's under arbitrary detention by the British government, according to the United Nations. We've got the full interview being screened on RT on Saturday. We must say that this is in the context of very senior people at the Democratic National Committee all resigning in the past 24 hours. We've had Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Brad Marshall, the chief finance officer of the DNC, Luis Miranda, the comms director, Amy Dacey, CEO. People are just falling apart. People are all being rolled over by the revelations from Julian Assange inside an embassy. But we also had to address the fact that Julian Assange was even talking to RT, because the Democrat Party, Hillary Clinton herself, are all saying forget about what the emails reveal, whether it be about ISIS, Daesh, whether it be whatever links that Hillary Clinton might prefer hidden. It's actually about the fact that Assange is basically a stooge of the Kremlin. This is what he how he addressed that.
Now, this is a separate question to the release of our email. So in the US media, there's been a deliberate conflation between DNC leaks, which is what we've been publishing, and DNC hacks of the US Democratic Party, which have occurred over the last 2 years by their own admission a number of times. Okay, so that's the circumstantial evidence that some Russian was involved, or someone who wanted to make it look like a Russian was involved with these other media organizations. That's not the case for the material that we released.
And he did go on in that interview to address a particularly serious topic in the wake of that attempted coup d'etat in Turkey.
Okay. So Assange says essentially there were leaks and hacks, and he published leaks. Because this is, you know, DNC is saying, okay, Russia hacked it, then gave it to him, then he leaked it. No, he said they are two separate issues. Just so you know. See, isn't it funny when you get a little closer to the truth? All right, we're going to go back in time for this next piece of audio. It is two of my favorite fake news producers of all time. And yes, it's probably because they're both, well, if I just stood back subjectively and said, Abby Martin and Amber Lyon are very attractive women, I'd be understating what's going on there. Okay. So, me being completely about full disclosure, I have to admit they're easy on the eye. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it ain't happening. I'm not that kind of guy. Now, they're young and beautiful, and they're doing some amazing things by telling the truth to people. And that's a great thing. And that's what makes them. See, when you get to be my age, and you're like in your 50s, it's not like you ever think you'd have a chance with a woman that young. You don't think those things. What you think is, wow, she's pretty or she's hot. But when they're 30 years younger than you, but their intellect and their charisma and their soul speaking to them, for the lack of a better phrase, is pushing and motivating these very empowered women to do very cool things, I'm sorry, but that makes them even more attractive to me. Absolutely. There is nothing more attractive than obviously, you know, the outward attraction you have. So there's always that. But when you get to be my age, you got to have something fucking going on above the neck. I've seen a few in my day. You know what I'm saying? So yes, Amber Lyon, Abby Martin. You know what? If Fox News is shortening skirts and showing cleavage, and they realize that part of the human condition is we are attracted to attractive people, then absolutely. And these women have never sold themselves out and gone that route, but they certainly haven't shied away from it. And again, you know, I don't want to spend the next 10 minutes talking about how Abby and Amber are hot. But yeah, but this audio, especially when Amber gets on her rant here in a minute, you're going to learn how if you, well, okay, you're going to, you're, what you already know is going to be reinforced because you're going to hear how it's not just them not running a story. It's sometimes omitting information. It's sometimes applying pressure to them. And when you hear about, when you think corporate controlled media, I'm going to let this roll for a while. I just wanted to tee it up nice. Listen to these two women at least for probably the next 5 or 6 minutes. Talk about, again, this show is not about fake news, but it's also showing you the exact truth about what, quote, real media, unquote, real media is about. And it's always been controlled. And it's always been either fake or omitted shit. All right, girls, take us away for a while. I'll be back.
After seeing the events unfold in Crimea, I came into work last week knowing that it might be my last day because I felt morally obligated to speak out against the editorial line of my employer. When I broke that set, the call was heard around the world by every mainstream media outlet imaginable, which picked up on the fact that a journalist working on a Russian-backed TV station was admonishing Russia, the focal point of indignant fervor around the world. But I wasn't simply calling out Russia. I was calling out the U.S. as well as every other global superpower that pits the people of other countries against each other as pawns to push a broader agenda of imperialism. Despite what the onslaught of hit pieces and the wake of the insanity said, I'm not anti-West or anti-Russia. I am pro-peace and pro-diplomacy. But above all, I have ethical consistency of an anti-military track record as well as a strong moral compass of empathy, compassion, and the rule of law. RT is funded by public grants in Russia in the same way that Al Jazeera is in BBC in Britain and Qatar. Yet every newscast I heard was prefaced with the reminder that RT is Kremlin-funded. Or it was introduced with a declaration that RT is widely considered a 24-hour propaganda network. Above all, I still have my job, which I think shocked people more than ever. You see, the fact that I might have more editorial freedom or leniency within the ranks than the majority of corporate-funded news outlets doesn't sit too well. But let me ask you this. When was the last time you saw the National Defense Authorization Act covered on corporate TV? Or Nestle's privatization of water around the earth? Or Monsanto's stronghold on food labeling in this country? Or what about the plight of the Oglala Sioux Native Americans at Pine Ridge? And when it comes to cheerleading America's wars, well, don't even get me started. See, six corporate giant conglomerates control nearly 90% of all media Americans consume. And let's be honest, the paradigm pushed by these outlets fits into a box that marginalizes radical thought and third-party voices. And there are far too many instances of establishment reporters either getting fired or resigning for speaking out against the editorial line of their network or for simply going against their advertisers. Like in 1999, when two Fox reporters named Jane Aker and Steve Wilson attempted to air a story about the dangers of genetically modified bovine growth hormone.
That actually happened right here in Tampa Bay at Fox 13. Believe it or not, that video's on there. It's all over YouTube. They discovered the issues with the bovine hormone. Basically, you got a 900-pound cow, you inject this shit. You got a 1,200-pound cow, you get 300 pounds more product to sell. And, but all kinds of issues, cancer-related issues, listen what happened.
And they were subsequently blocked from airing the report because of threats from Monsanto. And then there's NBC's Peter Arnett, who was immediately fired for making critical commentary about the Iraq war on Iraqi television. A memo from management made it very clear the reason was because he, quote, put a difficult face on the public for NBC in a time of war. Moving on to MSNBC's Phil Donahue, a news host who had a 29-year run on national TV. He was also fired because of his open criticism of the Iraq invasion.
Yeah, Donahue had the highest-rated show on MSNBC. Real news, by the way. Remember now, it's real news. But they gave him a talk show at night, and he was kicking ass. And then everything takes place, 9/11, and everything takes place. And they're like, Phil, you're going to, you're gonna go Team America on this, right? 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 No, he was against it, and they fired him. Real news? No. The news is what we say it is. Period. And guess what? We've pushed back. And we go, no, it's what thousands are saying. And yes, we'll have to decipher some of that information. But guess what? We don't believe your bullshit anymore. And they're panicking. I did when I saw fake news trending, I was like, are you goddamn kidding me? That's beautiful. That's like, seriously, like what they did with Occupy. I think Amber gets to this. So yeah, let's let two of my favorite Liberty, we'll call them Liberty Ladies. Liberty Lady, I don't know, whatever. It's Amber and Abby.
As Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges so aptly said, that moment was a time that commercial television decided amassing corporate money and providing entertainment was its central mission. And then there's a woman named Andrea Seabrook, a former NPR reporter on the Hill, who resigned in protest of impartiality. She came on Breaking the Set to tell me how fed up she was with essentially reprinting government press releases. She actually called the incestuous relationship between reporters and politicians on the Hill collusion. And most recently, there's CBS News investigator Cheryl Atkinson, who resigned out of her contract early, citing that she was frustrated with the network's bias and pressure from its corporate partners.
Yes, this is an old report, by the way. Yeah, of course it is. But it's all about a few good people that got into a situation. NPR reporter told, no, you just take it off the fax machine and that's what we, that's our news. No, we don't good background check. We don't confirm. No. And you heard me talk about NPR earlier. My girlfriend still listens to NPR and you know, some of the stuff I'm hearing about what's going on overseas and how bad Assad is, it's like, man, no, it's about pipelines. So when NPR is bullshitting me, I mean, maybe 20 years ago when the neocons were just like completely tomahawking the world and you know, the left was, I don't know, had a peaceful bone left in their body. Yeah. You know, I was like, NPR, what's NPR have to say about this? Now they're they're all just sitting down on their knees with their mouths open.
The dissent at RT became viral. A former writer for the Democratic website Think Progress also wrote an article saying that he felt suffocating pressure reporting in D.C. and that his network would get berated with phone calls from the White House if he criticized the administration. This type of self-censorship is nothing new. It comes with the territory of working for any large media outlet funded by questionable entities. Except the difference with corporate media is that there are literally hundreds of conflicts of interest fueling their editorial lines. So we're here to go over a topic of censorship and truth in media. I'm joined now by investigative journalist and former CNN reporter Amber Lyon. Amazing to have you on, Amber.
Thank you, Abby, so much for having me. It's an honor.
So, Amber, you famously left CNN after working there for years, citing reasons of censorship. Can you talk about what happened with your documentary that you filmed in Bahrain for the network?
Again, I've had both these women on DC back in the day of the IO days. And they've been so consistent from way back then to who they are now. I know, you know, I'm a dude and I'm, yes, they're hot, but you know what? This is the future. For dudes too. Ben Swan's nailing it. He's researching stuff. He's putting videos out on a consistent basis. And say what you will about WikiLeaks, they have yet to be proven wrong. We're going to see an explosion of information. And who knows if that literally is like the movie Johnny Mnemonic, where they can end a cancer, or they can find a completely safe nuclear source that just, you know, Doc Ock kind of stuff from Spider-Man. Whatever all that information is that's being held back from mankind is going to explode forward because the controllers no longer control the conversation. If you can't see the beauty in that, you're not paying attention, to what I'm about and what this show's about? Because let me tell you, this is fucking progress. Now listen to what Amber had to go through. And she goes on an amazing rant here, very educational rant.
Yeah, we produced this documentary exposing that this Bahrain regime, the regime the United States had been supporting financially and with weapons, that this same regime was actually even using some of those weapons to torture and murder its people. And after we produced this documentary, we were told by CNN International that the documentary wasn't going to air. And we were given almost no explanation, Abby, as to why they chose not to air this documentary. And after further investigation, we found out that Bahrain was a paying customer at the network at CNN, that Bahrain and several other pro-United States regimes worldwide are actually paying CNN to produce positive content and fake documentaries about them, which I consider to be infomercials for dictators. And I think that CNN sprinkles this into their programming with little or no disclosure to viewers and their own journalists. And it's really defrauding viewers and really misleading people, Abby.
That is fascinating, Amber. What I find most interesting is that every time I talk about self-censorship to people like Piers Morgan or Bob Garfield on NPR, they are all shocked. They're like, what are you talking about? We never self-censor. I mean, do you think that this is a big issue in the press today?
It's a tremendously big issue, Abby. A lot of the muckraking journalists have actually had to leave the mainstream, including myself, because we just can't do our jobs on these networks because there is so much censorship. In 10 years of working in the mainstream, I was censored on stories at every single one of my jobs, whether that be to please corporate interests or the story was censored to please the United States government. So this is a chronic problem that's really destroying journalism in the United States, and people really need to understand when you're watching the mainstream media, you're not getting the accurate picture. A lot of the journalists have been turned into lapdogs versus watchdogs because that's what management wants.
Right. I mean, I was just mentioning two reporters that have basically said that they resigned because they were sick of reprinting government press releases. I mean, this is the way it works on the Hill here, Amber. I mean, as someone who's worked in the establishment media for so long, how would you say the editorial process works when people pitch stories they want to cover? I mean,
oh, wait, you hear this. See, the first part of what she told you, I was aware of, because when I had Amber on a while ago, it was really about that story on how she left CNN. Now, of course, she's doing reset.me, R-E-S-E-T dot M-E, which is all about real investigation and story compilation and research gathering based on everything from psilocybin to MDMA and everything else. So Amber's taking that turn, ayahuasca, all those things. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you're probably familiar with her. But this part, I wasn't unaware of. I just didn't think, wow, you know, you watch those movies about how it is at a newspaper or a TV station, and you realize that you got to kind of plow through a whole bunch of bullshit to just air a story, because you're always going to worry about pissing off somebody, an advertiser, a local politician, whatever. All of those things take place. Listen to what Amber has to say just about the process in general.
Do most journalists have that editorial freedom?
No, they don't. And I didn't have that when I was at CNN. And you're talking about that close, cozy relationship between Washington reporters and the U.S. government. While I was at CNN, I'd actually have other journalists at CNN write me and call me and ask me to amend my stories in favor of the U.S. government or government entities. They would call me on behalf of the U.S. government to change my stories, which I often refused to do. But, I mean, that's just the nature of what's going on there. A lot of these journalists have cozy, cozy relationships with authorities that are very questionable. They're doing more propaganda than they are actually investigative journalism. And, two, there's a message sent from the top down to journalists in these newsrooms as to what's appropriate to cover and what's not. Case in point, the Occupy movement. Almost instantly when the Occupy movement started, management made it seem like it was an annoying movement, like viewers didn't want to see what was happening on the streets, like they were just some, you know, hippies with no important message. And one executive at CNN, I was sitting down at dinner with him, actually told me that Occupy didn't deserve to be covered. And so when this is sent from the top down, this kind of message as to what you should be reporting on, it really influences what you end up seeing on the TV at the end of the day, Abby.
Amber, you bring up a really good point. And you know, it's really, really interesting that you were talking about Bahrain actually funding these networks, because I think when people think of corporate media, the last thing they're thinking of is actually tyrannical establishments or regimes around the world actually also funding. How much do you think that an unchallenged establishment by mainstream journalists is due to a loss of access to sources?
I think that is one of the main causes. You know, I think that right now we're just not seeing investigative journalism, and so the corrupt are getting away with whatever they choose because there's not a lot of investigation, Abby.
Right.
There, later on, they go into actual Russian politics at the time, basically, everything that was happening in Crimea. So that's why I wanted to play you that part, because I want to go to a Ben Swan video this time around.
Did the Pentagon really spend $500 million creating propaganda videos in Iraq? According to a new report, yes.
Sorry, I wanted to, like, make it dramatic.
Well, the question,
damn it.
Did the Pentagon really spend $500 million creating propaganda videos in Iraq?
And the answer is, Ledge, I like drama.
According to a new report, yes. But why? And what do we as taxpayers have to show for it? This is a reality check you won't see anywhere else. Well, a brand new report by the Bureau for Investigative Journalism has revealed a stunning program. It turns out that a London-based PR agency was paid by the Pentagon some $540 million to make fake Al-Qaeda propaganda videos. So what were they doing here? Well, the PR company is called Bell Pottinger. It's a massive PR.
What do you do? You know, I was doing Shakespeare, but now, you know, I'm doing Al-Qaeda videos. Yeah, they're just like on fire on YouTube. They're awesome. Yeah, after I'm done, let me say, no, the blokes are paying for it. Yes. Yeah, I saw the ad in the paper. Can you play a terrorist? I'm like, yeah, if I can play a terrorist, yeah. Then I go down the street, and the guy says, we'll play you 20 quid. And I'm like, what? And you go, you just yell, death to America, man. We'll film you in. Put this thing over your face. There is a pecking order in this story. The Pentagon spent $500 million paying somebody else to make Al-Qaeda videos. That's one part of the story. The other one is, who are the actors, man? You got some guys like out of work and he's like, man, I'm doing Shakespeare. Fuck that. Dude, you can be. I'm doing Al-Qaeda videos. I got a new car. Seriously? You know? There's always that level of the story. Who's the guy that's like, you know, like when they had the one where they're like on the jungle gym, you know, where the bars go across and you have to kind of grab one in front of you and they're like wearing Al-Qaeda uniforms and they're like, you know, it's like you're watching preseason football or something. All right, ready, everybody, hit the jungle gym. Al-Qaeda on three. Ready? One, two, three. Al-Qaeda. You're killing me, Whitey. They're killing me.
Our firm in Britain. And their job was to create three different kinds of propaganda on behalf of the U.S. Their work was signed off on by either General David Petraeus or by the White House. So what were they creating? Well, the first two forms of output are called gray ops. The first was a television commercial portraying Al-Qaeda in a negative light. The second, news items which were made to look as if they'd been created by Arabic TV. Bell Pottinger would send teams...
All right, how do you make it look Arabic? Throw some fucking dust on the lens. And everything turns brown. It's awesome. There it is. There's the genius cameraman. How do you fake, I don't know, man. It rained 3 days in a row. We need a dusty desert. Oh, fuck. Shit. Let's go to the golf course. I can find some sand there. We throw some sand up on a lens and then and fake it.
Out to film low-definition video of Al-Qaeda bombings, then edit it together like a piece of news footage.
Low-def. It's always low-def, too. You ever notice that, too? It's like the truck is this little blurry thing. You can barely see it, and the guy's like 900 yards away, and they probably threw some dust on the lens. And then they go like, fake! Fucking fake. Wag the dog. $500 million worth of fake news, courtesy of your Pentagon.
It would be voiced in Arabic and then distributed to TV stations across the region. And then there is the third most controversial output. It was a black ops operation. In this case, Bill Pottinger would create 10-minute-long fake Al-Qaeda recruitment videos. The CDs were set up to use RealPlayer. It's a popular media streaming application which connects to the Internet in order to run. The team would embed a code into the CDs, which linked to a Google Analytics account, giving a list of IP addresses where the CDs had been played. This was supposed to help the U.S. military locate Al-Qaeda sympathizers. But U.S. military had to use a private contractor to create the videos because of U.S. law that makes it illegal for the government to fund propaganda that may be seen by Americans. Now, we can debate the merits of using propaganda in a war zone, but arguing that this propaganda worked, that's the real trick. After all, the Pentagon spent $500 million creating propaganda videos to convince Iraqis that Al-Qaeda is bad, and yet ISIS still able to take over the northern part of the country. And the Pentagon created propaganda videos to track terrorists. So did they? Who did they stop? And if it worked, how did these videos prevent the continued destabilization of Iraq and Syria? And that's what you need to know, because the bottom line, it didn't. American taxpayers have spent $500 million paying one company, Bell Pottinger. But what's more, reports show the Pentagon hired over 40 other companies to create propaganda news articles and news stories and other forms of propaganda.
Fake news. It's delivered in another country. See, over there, we invent shit and give it to the Iraqis, and we call it propaganda. Now, we know it's that. We know it's that. But they call it bullshit. You know, when I started doing this show, when did I start doing this show? 5 years ago? I said to myself, it is a fascinating time to be alive. And then during this whole Hillary and Trump debacle, I kept posting hashtag best election ever. And the reason I say that is because I see large amounts of people waking up to, again, whatever that topic is. Maybe it's autism and vaccines. That's a conversation that needs to take place. I'm not saying I side either way. What I'm saying is let's have a conversation, a public conversation about this, and let's never force someone to have their own child vaccinated. It is their child. I would never want my daughter to give her new grandchild, or my new grandchild that's coming in April, any type of inoculation until she's done her homework and she's asked the doctor a good query of questions versus, oh, you're the guy in the white coat and I have to accept what you tell me. So it always breaks down to the human. Not the human. It always breaks down to the single person. Any topic you talk about, you know, again, like it, I'm not a big chemtrail guy, but if you are and, you know, you need to go there, go there. If you are anybody, anywhere that's tried real hard to look into things and you feel a little lost, step away, go fishing, go for a hike, go for a bike ride, go get laid, go eat a chocolate mousse. Go take a snooze. Go party with a live band. Live your life. But now that they are attacking, and I see this thing called fake news, you've already heard Amber's story. Abby Martin tracks down Cenk from the Young Turks. And again, this is a guy who worked for the mainstream media. It's not that this show is to prove anything to you. It's to just give you some ammunition. When people talk about, oh, you know, Alex Jones or fake news. You know what? God bless Alex Jones and everybody else. Regardless of their percentage of hits that are correct, their percentage. I love thousands of opinions. Not two. I don't want five people owning every bit of information that's piped to me in the mainstream media. I don't like it, and I don't want it. I don't want four oil companies. I want 400. So when you wonder how things keep shrinking, it's because information is being omitted or censored. And here's yet another good example. Abby Martin. This time it's Jake.
...is plummeting, especially when it comes to the Fourth Estate. According to a Gallup poll from last year, people actually trust banks more than they do newspapers or TV news in this country. But the distrust of the mainstream has paved the way for a renaissance of alternative media to flourish. And perhaps there's no better example than the Young Turks. The Young Turks is a purely online network of shows and political commentary that has become one of the most popular channels on YouTube with over 1 billion views. Well, earlier today, I was joined by the founder, host of the Young Turks, and former MSNBC anchor, Cenk Uygur, to discuss...
You know, by the way, I know I bust on Tucker, but I'm glad he's over there. Well, you know, he's over on the right, man. You got a Young Turks or something? It doesn't mean I agree. It doesn't mean anything other than... I'm glad somebody else is got an opinion, but of course he's what I played to you was from his official Fox News TV show. I guess you know what it is? You just can't pick your poison. You're going to have to deal with it. Sometimes your enemy can become your ally in the changing of one conversation. I think that's a good way to put it. Good story here.
That's why his good media story. Platform is far more successful than the corporate media will ever be. I first asked him about the behind-the-scenes story concerning his departure from the corporate press.
Well, I got a speech a couple months before they made the switch on time slots saying that I needed to be more pro-establishment. Literally, that's exactly what they told me, which was amazing to me. And they said, you know, outsiders are cool, but that's not who we are. This is NBC, we're insiders. And they said that Washington was not happy with my tone. So I'm always amused by people who think that the cable news operators here in America are totally independent. It's funny how under the thumb that other channels are of governments, et cetera, our own channels are under the thumb of our own government.
Right. And of course, you know, people guffaw at the notion of censorship. Oh, I don't self-censor, says Piers Morgan. But, you know, Cenk, you bring up a good point, which is that we have this corporate media apparatus that is actually towing the line of the establishment. Should that be scary to people? Because, of course, people give RT a lot of flack for towing the line of the Russian foreign policy perspective. But here we have a media apparatus entirely funded by corporations that's towing the line of the U.S. government. Should that be concerning?
Yeah, I actually think in some ways it's more concerning because, of course, a giant corporation like Comcast has its own, you know, needs. Comcast owns MSNBC at this point. And
I really like what he says here. I'm going to let it roll a little while because he keeps everything in perspective and he also talks about the true, just plain old business reality. Like he just mentioned Comcast. In other words, is Comcast some evil empire? Or no, they're just a giant conglomerate. And you know what? They fucking care about themselves. That's what these large organizations do. But if they collude or if they somehow find talent that's doing well and push them out, then you ask yourself, then maybe they are the scary entity. Not by themselves, but as part of the machine. And that's really how I feel about these guys now. You realize there's some guy up the street from now running a radio company, and he just wants decent ratings and making money and blah, blah, blah. doesn't really care about what the message is or anything. Well, just, you know, go up 10 more rungs on that ladder and you're at CNN or MSNBC. So it's there. I'm going to back it up and let this roll because he does a great job explaining not just how it's fucked up and how, yes, it is controlled, but he also keeps talking about it on the perspective of each topic. He does a great job here. Talk to you in a few.
I actually think in some ways it's more concerning because, of course, a giant corporation like Comcast has its own, you know, needs. Comcast owns MSNBC at this point. And they're going to drive in that direction and not necessarily in the direction of what serves the audience best. But they're also intertangled with the government. So, for example, they're right now in the middle of trying to acquire the second largest cable operator. They're, of course, the largest in the country. And in order to do that, they're going to need the permission of the government. So it might help if they were friendly with the government. The previous owner of NBC was GE, one of the largest defense contractors in the country. So they have a ton of contracts that are related to the government. So those things are, as I personally witnessed, totally intertwined with one another. And so to give you more detail on what happened with me, you know, they said, okay, we're going to move you to the weekends and out of prime time at 6 o'clock. And I remember in the conversation I asked, look, are my ratings okay? Full well knowing the answer that they were actually the best ratings that they had at 6 o'clock until then. And, of course, the answer was yes, your ratings are excellent. And I said, if you move me to the weekends, if I've done everything you've asked internally, right, and it's not the content and it's not the ratings, well, then what is it? And it was met with about 30 seconds of the most awkward silence you've ever heard in your life. So, yes, they're intertangled, and yes, they make decisions based on that. And if Piers Morgan doesn't realize that, he's got his, you know, head buried in the sand.
Well, I think people like Piers Morgan, maybe they don't think that they self-censor because they're just super generic and have been kind of groomed for this position because they toe the line so well. I mean, maybe.
This is another beautiful point that they both not only agree on, but reference is just because you look good on camera doesn't mean you deserve to be there. Because if America's going to take its media back, then the people on those cameras, almost the way you would expect a public servant, and I don't mean some socialist way, I just mean that news anchor, that news reporter, where we get back to America as in Americans, control the Fourth Estate again. And that's really what today's show is about, is you're seeing the struggle for the Fourth Estate. Finally, I might add, which is beautiful to see. And I know we're going back in time a little bit, but not too far back for these people that have all been on both sides of it, Amber and Cenk and other people like that, who were told, no. Now, if I'm the CEO, I'm like, hell yeah, we're fake news. Cenk, shut the fuck up. No more reports on toxic spills. Well, I thought that was my job as a reporter. Shut the fuck up. We are MSNBC. Okay. It's not our job to tell people the fucking truth. It's our job to take care of our corporate sponsors. And that's where we are at. I know it's kind of a parody, and I'm just fucking around and riffing here, but that's really where we are at. Most people in media, official media, are the go-along and get-along type, and that's why they stay. Listen to what they say here.
I mean, that says a lot about who these people are. But what does it say about the future of this kind of media machine? I mean, CNN, for example, fired over 40 people to replace them with entertainment journalists, and their new model is going to reality TV.
Yeah, you know, there's so many different parts of that. First of all, I think a lot of people on TV are good people, and they don't even quite realize that they're part of this machine. But what happened was they got promoted because they towed the line.
Mm-hmm.
They think that they got promoted because they were so good on TV. But the reality is most of the people who stuck their head out, like Ashley Banfield was basically, literally, in her MSNBC days, put in a closet because she spoke out against the Iraq war. Now, that was back when MSNBC was conservative, right? And so what the person who got the promotion above Ashley Banfield doesn't realize is they got that promotion because they didn't say anything against the Iraq war. They didn't say anything against the government. They didn't say anything about how corporate money totally and utterly controls our politics. So that's how the system moves people up that are willing to play ball and moves people down if they're not. Now, to the idea of the entertainment taking over cable news, look, and I don't mind entertainment news on the Young Turks. We do entertainment news, mm-hmm. but it's got its place, right? And if you're supposed to be the most trusted name in news, you should do some news, right? And so for CNN, let me ask an interesting question for you. When's the last time they broke a really interesting investigative story about the government?
I can't remember.
I'll give you a couple of years to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, the lockup on MSNBC is enough, but now that CNN's going to go half reality, you're right. I mean, these 24-hour news channels, it's like, what is going on here? I mean, and of course, that one story that the mainstream just can't get enough of is this missing plane.
I think that's where we'll kill that one, because, yeah, that was kind of weird. And I think we're going to get a little bit of Jimmy here.
You see this donut? I've actually sold.
It's the Jimmy Dore show. I like Jimmy Dore. I don't even know anything about him, but I do know I like him. And here we go.
Why we're in Syria. You ever wonder why we're in Syria? It's still because we're trying to help people.
I think he's part of the Young Turks, right? I think he is. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'm here with Robert Yesimura, Hank Thompson. We're going to talk about Syria. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he wrote an article. We covered some of it that appeared in the Politico. This is also over at Echo Watch, which is at
Eco. Echo is hello, 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 hello. Eco is the planet. That's. I know, I'm being a dick. Okay, I'll stop.
Even of a longer version of that story, and there's some stuff that we left out I want to talk about. So what are we doing in Syria, right? So what?
Remember now, my official news sources and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, and the official news organizations that aren't fake news, there's no way they're fake news, have been telling me that this Assad guy, well, he's the bad man. See, we need to go free the Syrian people just like we did with Muammar Gaddafi, who... Oh, by the way, had his society living at a high standard of living. A high standard of living. He wanted his own coin called the dinar that would be backed by their gold and oil. He wanted Africa to have its own currency. He's dead. Because, well, you know. He was a bad man. We ain't got to get... Yeah. So now in Syria, everybody's like, wow, you know, and Aleppo is just... And I'm watching videos from that today, and people are sending videos thinking it's the last time they will communicate outside before they are killed inside that city where people are dying around them, and they know it's their time, and they are leaving social media. This is supposedly because Assad is a bad man, right? Right? That's why we're here. That's why we've been bombing the fuck out of that country. Yeah. Oh, ISIS. Yeah. Well, in the next 10 minutes, you're going to learn again your not so fake news is fake news.
What America doesn't know is that the CIA, at our behest, has been toppling governments in the Mideast left and right, trying to all the time since the 40s. This is true. Iran, Syria, Jordan, Afghanistan, all of them. We've been had our fingers in. We want to control it. And Robert Kennedy says, while the compliant American press parrots the narrative that our military support for the Syrian insurgency is purely humanitarian, many Syrians see the present crisis as just another proxy war over pipelines and geopolitics.
What? He's not a bad man. You mean Syria's right there on the Mediterranean? And there are how many different pipelines proposed that need to go through there? Let's find out, boys and girls.
What? A pipeline? I've never once heard Rachel Maddow or Brian Williams mention a pipeline. And that's why we're in Syria. Did you ever hear that, Hank? No. You ever hear anybody mention that? A pipeline?
No, not a lot of pipeline talk on Brian
about
Williams.
What we're doing in Syria? No. How about you, Rob? You ever hear them talk about a pipeline?
I haven't heard them talk about anything in terms of Syria that explained what the hell's going on.
No, it's just that
Assad is bad.
And ISIS cuts people's hands off.
And Russia's there. And
Russia's
bad,
there. Like, and we're going to fix it.
Mosul.
So...
And Mosul.
Yeah. A lot of people think the Syrian war started in 2011 with the Arab Spring, but instead it really began in 2000. Was it Ralph Nader? No. It was when Qatar proposed to construct a $10 billion, 1,500-kilometer pipeline through Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, and Turkey. So now this has been going on for... Not just since 2000. In fact, he points out that the Bruce Lovett report, which is from the 50s, pointed out that when the CIA keeps intervening, that this is antithetical to American values, and it has compromised America's international leadership and moral authority without the knowledge of the American people. So like when the CIA overthrew the Iran government, tried to overthrow the Syrian government, the people on the ground know this stuff, but we don't know it here. In America. So they know that. And
why don't we know it here in America? Aren't my real news sources plugged in and wanting to tell me the truth behind the real geopolitics wars, plural, wars? They don't even call them wars anymore. They just drop bombs on people and they call them skirmishes, disagreements. A damn shame. So as you can see where we're going, you're being lied to by your real news sources. Those same ones that are attacking the fake ones that people actually want you to know what's going on in the world and why maybe your son, daughter, aunt, uncle, mom, dad didn't come home from another bullshit rally story like Let's Roll from 9/11, and you're unsatisfied now? Well, you know what? Fuck the mainstream media. Fuck them.
And the report, this is a report from our own government, they report blamed the CIA for the rampant anti-Americanism that was mysteriously taking root in the many countries in the world today. So it wasn't that they hate our freedom or our liberty. This is even back in the 50s. It was rampant anti-American was because of the CIA effing with other people's governments in the Middle East, all for war, and because they were afraid of Arab nationalism, right? They saw that as fighting. We're going to fight Marxism, so we're going to fight Arab nationalism. And whenever an Arab country wanted to keep their own oil reserves for their own people, that meant we had to go stop that, right? So here's the pipeline that he's talking about, by the way. So look at this.
Okay, we got a visual here. And I will let you know there are... Of course, the geopolitics, there's a pipeline that runs right from the Caspian base in all the way across Turkey. And it's going to find itself all the way across the Black Sea and into Europe. That already exists. That's Russia. They get to own all that natural gas, the Caspian Basin natural gas, and 70% of their sales go to Europe. Russia is allied with Syria. Syria says, no, we got a couple of pipelines, and Jimmy will, I know it's because we're dealing with a podcast, and he's pointing at a map, but he does a pretty good job of basically telling you there are two proposed pipelines, they both run through Syria, and Assad has said no. It's not about him being a bad man. It's not about him and chemical weapons. Doesn't that fucking sound familiar? You think, you know, Saddam Hussein in the 80s? These stories are getting so old and so easy to poke holes through that a podcaster in St. Pete, Florida, knows more about what's going on in Syria than 90% of Americans who think it's about, oh, he's a bad man. We're going to go drop bombs on him. He's a bad man. No. I know. It's kind of neat to have the sirens going off. Here we go, Jimmy.
So here's the pipeline starting at Qatar. So this is the, by the way, this is natural gas. Right. So Saudi Arabia and Iran, they have the largest natural gas deposit in the world, and so Qatar wants to take it through Jordan. Go Saudi Arabia, Jordan, through Syria, through Turkey. So they're on board. Jordan's on board. Turkey's on board. Guess who's not on board? Syria. And there's the problem. So now here's the other pipeline. Comes from Iran. These are the competing pipelines. Shia, Sunni. Okay? Just so you know. And Russia is against this one. They don't want this one. Russia is against it. Because Russia gives a lot. They're in bed
with
Iran.
Well, actually, Russia doesn't want either.
Right. But if they were going to have one, the Russians would lead. Well, let's get into it. Because Robert Kennedy says, of course, the Russians, who sell 70% of their gas exports to Europe, viewed the Qatar-Turkey pipeline as an existential threat. This is to your point, Robert. In Putin's view, the Qatar pipeline is a NATO plot to change the status quo, deprive Russia of its only foothold in the Middle East, strangle the Russian economy, and end Russian leverage in the European energy market.
Mm-hmm.
But they never tell you this stuff.
No.
You have to seek this information out. It's out there, but you have to. They never say it like so it gets into the consciousness of the American people. They don't ever do that. In 2009, Assad announced that he would refuse to sign the agreement to allow the pipeline to run through Syria to protect the entrance of our Russian ally.
Boom. No, you can't run your pipeline through my country. And suddenly, you're... real news stations vilify another man who knows what was truth, what is truth, that has come out of Syria. Everything from what he's been accused of doing to the government to where ISIS, quote unquote, has a stronghold and everything else, it all comes to you from state-controlled media. And like Jimmy's saying, it's the info's out there. The real reason we're in Syria is pipelines. That's it. That's the truth. Let me know when you see that on anything with a big logo in our country. Seriously.
What happened then when he tells the United States and Saudi Arabia that I'm not going to let you have your pipeline? What do you think happened? Well, at that very moment that Assad rejected the pipeline, military and intelligence planners quickly arrived at a consensus that fomenting a Sunni uprising in Syria would be a good thing. At that very moment, they decided to, hey, let's overthrow this guy. According to Cy Hirsch, before the war started, Assad was moving to liberalize the country. Yeah, so they weren't going towards theocracy or fundamentalism. Syria was actually, again, the way Iran was before we messed it up,
a
secular democracy, right?
And
so
Libya.
He was moving that way. According to him, he said they had internet and newspapers and ATM machines, and Assad wanted to move toward the West. After 9/11, get this, Robert, Assad gave thousands of invaluable files to the CIA on jihadist radicals, who he considered a mutual enemy.
I know.
Who he still does.
Yes, he does. We consider ISIS an enemy. So does this.
Well, we should stop funding them. I'm just saying. That's a separate story.
Assad, except we consider Assad an enemy, too.
And we should stop buying their oil. You know, they're stealing oil and selling it. There must be markets and exchanges that can simply stop those transactions from taking place. Don't you think how easy it would be to push fucking button and cut off their funding? What do you think? They get just constant bags of or truckloads of cash? Everything's digital now. If ISIS is such a big bad boogeyman, we could cut off their funding in a sneeze. But we don't. We need a boogeyman. We need reasons to be there. And Mrs. Smith, who lives in Nebraska and puts her flag out every morning and loves Jesus and thinks that we're the good guys. We need a boogeyman. So he's the newest boogeyman. But now we're finding out it's not about him. Again, it's never about them. It's about what they've said no to. Oh, yeah, fuck you. Dead. I'm going to come out with my own currency. Dead. I'm not letting you pump no pipelines to you. Not dead yet. It's really what it is.
I say bomb them both, which is what we're doing. All right, ready? On September 4th, get this. Get this, Robert. On September 4th, 2013, Secretary of State John Kerry told a congressional hearing that the Sunni kingdoms, meaning like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, had offered to foot the bill for a U.S. invasion of Syria to oust Assad.
Say what? Yeah, we want him gone. We want to run a pipeline through his country. We need to oust him. Okay. Saudi Arabia and Qatar go, all right, well, yeah, just give us the blank check. We'll sign it. We'll fund it. We'll fund your war to get rid of him. Because he's a bad man. He's a bad man who happens to be sitting on the geopolitical soil. Might as well be sitting on a pile of gold where he's at. Both land access to Europe that goes through northern Syria or western, which would go right to the Med and ships and so on. So there's a reason Russia's allies with this country, and this country is acting and has been acting like Russia's ally. But the truth is, it's about natural gas and oil pipelines. And there's a meme that I've put on a couple of times. It says, United States of America is an oil company with an army. And don't you doubt that that's what it's about. Period. That's the truth.
This is in 2013. Kerry told a congressional hearing. I never heard this reported. Did you hear this reported? He said, in fact, some of them, this is according to Kerry, in fact, some of them had said that if the, some of them, meaning the Arab states, the Sunni Arab states, mm-hmm. meaning Qatar, Saudi Arabia, some of them had said that if the United States is prepared to go do the whole thing the way we've done it previously in other places, Iraq, they'll carry the cost.
Color me not shocked.
So that's what this is all about. This is all about oil, a pipeline. This isn't about John Kerry pretending to be upset that they're bombing hospitals or using chemical weapons, and that's why we got to go in. It's all about oil.
Wait a minute. My real news organizations beg to differ, mister. Yeah. This is a good thing. It's a good thing. I'm pretty stoked about what's happened. I'm not, like, completely, you know, blown away. But I knew that eventually we would get to the flow of information. Now, remember, they've already tried to limit your speeds on internet. And they can do that. Basically, they're gonna either price you out of high access or what's going on there. We've already seen tier rates here in the Tampa Bay area. And that's a corporation bringing you access to the internet, and that's how, you know, they get you. Maybe there'll be five or six more that can come on in and create that competition that drives prices down. But if not, expect to be paying for your information. But at this point, they certainly haven't censored it. But the moment, I don't care who it is, what website, what blog, the moment one of them is blocked, and I mean blocked, knowingly blocked on Google search engines and Facebook and Twitter, knowingly blocked, then expect a huge pushback. People realize the issue is now the flow of information. They're flocking to it, and they will not have it limited. I can guarantee you that. And it's a beautiful thing. I really mean it. You know, I wanted to get to the terrestrial story, and I kept pushing it back in my mind and saying, well, you know, I'll say this. When there's two radio stations, one that rocks, one that's classic rock, and you come on in and you're number three, and you try to be both things, you're doomed to fail. That's called being safe. A safe doesn't work anymore. People have too many opportunities now. Choices, call it what you will. So the next time you launch a signal and a format, have a niche. Don't apologize for it. Don't try to get more than just it. And dedicate yourself to a niche. And I don't mean a niche in a bad way. I just mean super serve it and stop trying to be two things like you were. It was disappointing. Don't get me wrong. I love playing some of the tunes. I had a great time. I really did. But let's face it. I said to myself the first day I started there is pick one and go after it. You can't be both anymore. It's impossible. That's okay. Sure, there's a bean counter somewhere that goes, he's just a part-timer. What's he know? Yeah, I know. All right, guys, have a good one, and I will talk to you next week right here in Dangerous Conversation at RadioInfluence.com. Take us out, Captain Geach.
This is a LOL with Nancy Alexander quick fix on Radio Influence.
I was reading last week that somebody was working on a new birth control method for men, but they stopped the study because it was making men feel sick. Wah, wah, wah. Please. You have any idea what birth control pills do to your brain? Not that I'm in that business anymore. I mean, I once was as fertile as the Mississippi Delta, but but now there's tumbleweed blowing through my ovaries. The Zika virus could cause infertility in men, new study suggests. Ta-da! This is perfect. Only they've only found this in mice. They found that if they injected mice with the Zika virus, that their balls shrank and their testosterone levels fell. So I think this is a perfect solution and the perfect crime. You know why? Because it's only girl mosquitoes that bite. Do you guys hear that? Give P-Tuck. Come off the bench for three. He thought it was called marriage. The Zika virus could cause infertility in men. A new study suggests scientists in the U.S. discovered that mice infected with Zika had shrunken testicles, low testosterone levels, and low sperm counts, all of which are a personal victory, I think.
LOL with Nancy Alexander can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.